Welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're actually only doing one game. We are doing Pillars of Eternity.
Remember, many of the weeks.
Yes.
The podcast were most weeks.
Yeah.
We bring you two games. It's 2-3 weeks out of the year, we bring you one game.
Yep,
4 weeks out of the year, we bring you 6 games.
Whoa.
And on Tuesdays, when facing this direction, so the bigger games kind of demand more of our attention, even though if you're expecting I feel like a total blowout similar to our Isaac and our Wasteland 2 episodes, I didn't beat this like I wanted to.
I probably didn't even get as far as you did, but I have plenty to talk about. Definitely worth filling a full episode.
Yeah, so. Like it's still like a really significant thing, but I just life got in the way.
Yeah.
But Nick, tell me a little bit about Pillars of Eternity.
Sure. So Pillars of Eternity is created by Obsidian Entertainment. And they started a Kickstarter for it in September of 2012, which was one of the highest grossing Kickstarters of all time, getting $4.1 million. And then eventually came out for realsies on March 26th of 2015.
Yeah, and it was a long process, and people could listen to this and question, Obsidian's a big developer, that's a big budget. Like, why is this on this show? But it was really part of that weird. Like, now it doesn't seem as strange because we've had 3 years of like bigger studios and bigger game creators using Kickstarter, and the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter was just announced and the like.
Yeah.
But in 2012, it was really novel. And it was this idea for like kind of big studios to do indie-ish projects, even though this didn't turn out to be that indie-ish. Like it's just a niche, you know, like it
right.
doesn't, it's really high production values and everything. It's just a niche genre, niche product.
Yeah. And that, that genre, by the way, in case you weren't aware, it's a very classic CRPG in the same style as the Infinity Engine games like Baldur's Gate. Or Icewind Dale, or Planescape Torment.
It is so like those.
It is so Infinity Engine, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, like the way that I've described it to people who have asked me about it, because this, you know, Infinity Engine games are my thing, is that it's Baldur's Gate, but not D&D.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's got all of the, I mean, it is Baldur's Gate. Like, it controls and looks and feels a lot like Baldur's Gate, but without being attached to the second edition rule set.
Right.
D&D.
It is a completely custom rule set made specifically for this game. It seems to be pretty cool. The game was mainly the brainchild of Josh Sawyer, Something Awful's darling Rope Kid, who is the reason why there's references to low tax in Icewind Dale.
Yes.
and this is basically his dream, fantasy RPG, and designed a whole system, obviously not alone, but designed a whole mechanics and all the maths and all that stuff for this system, with the primary focus of essentially being able to play however you want and still coming up with something viable. So you can do stuff you wouldn't typically do, like battle mages are something really easy to do in this game. You can make someone who can go up and fight melee but still have spells, something kind of D&D didn't really lend itself towards very well.
Yeah, it's definitely has a lot of kind of ease of use considerations that D&D doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Sawyer is kind of like the second half of Obsidian, the second name other than Chris Avellone.
Yeah.
And now that Chris Avellone has left, Obsidian, like, it is Josh's show, and he's, you know, on the credits of most of, like, he primarily was in the lead of like the Icewind Dale games, which are lesser Infinity Engine games, but he's all over like the Fallout Bible.
Yeah,
you know, if you read that document and the like, and so he's done a lot of cool stuff before that as well,
right?
And this smacks, it's like this is an Obsidian game without the jankiness too.
Yeah, it's incredibly playable, which, like, I was expecting it to still have that same level of, you know, bugginess we expect from, you know, these guys, these Black Isle
Interplay
Troika guys.
Yeah.
But no, like it is solid, and they've even been patching the hell out of it. There was one real embarrassing bug right at the start that was kind of game breaking and really silly, but the patch that came afterwards actually fixed that up, so that you know, within the same week, that bug's been gone and fixed everyone's saves beforehand. So
it is. I mean, that's kind of a symptom of. I mean, symptom makes it sound like a bad thing. That's a hallmark of a larger piece of this, which is that like. This is a very heavily curated project.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a very hands-on Kickstarter. I ended up filtering the updates from this Kickstarter into my spam folder. Because there's so many of them and they were so fucking dense.
Yeah.
And like it is such a project of love and like such a intense, you know, kind of work of dedication. So it's just like, it doesn't feel like they're giving up on it. It doesn't feel like, you know, they've announced an expansion for it.
Yep.
You know, this is their thing and they love it and it comes through. And that, I'll talk about bug fixes a little bit later because they actually patched out something that I liked.
Okay.
I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to the gameplay stuff. But one of the big things, and you touched on this a little bit, that makes this different than D&D is this kind of, viability of classes thing. And it reminds me, Nick and I play, in a tabletop game, and it reminds me of the way that Iron Kingdoms works, where like, one of the things about Iron Kingdoms is that like everybody in Iron Kingdoms can swing a sword. Everybody in Iron Kingdoms can shoot a gun.
Right.
So like you don't have to, if you spec your guy to be like a gun guy, he's going to be better at it. But everybody's capable.
Yeah.
And the way they've balanced the classes in Pillars of Eternity is everyone is capable. And that's really cool. Like, and the classes are really imaginative. Like they map up to traditional D&D classes up to a point.
Yeah.
Like you can get your warriors and your wizards and priests and rangers. And then for the miscellaneous classes, they go kind of out there and do weirder shit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. They've done, you know, like the monk isn't exactly as it is in D&D, but they've done a lot of cool tweaks that make for interesting play styles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing as I can't even remember the class name anymore.
It's the one, yeah, it's the you play as the guy who has the weird like soul whip or whatever.
Yeah, so what it is that they get spell casting points from dealing damage aside from their spells. So I'm playing her ranged with a bow and arrow right now, and every time she scores a hit, she gets some amount of points to use towards casting spells. And so it's a mix of balancing the two. And the monk is kind of the opposite in that he gets spell casting points for taking damage.
Mm.
So you want to build, you know, monks are built to be tanky spellcasters, essentially. They're meant to run into the middle, get hit a bunch, and use that to deal damage back to everyone.
And then they're on top of that, another weird kind of consideration of spellcasting is how they've treated bards with their chanter class, who starts singing a song, and the songs have passive minor benefits.
Yeah.
But the trick is you kind of compose these songs, so you come up with layers. You stack these minor benefits, and if you sing for long enough, then you can unleash them in these cool allegorical songs, like these like Gerard and Tanagra.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, like, you know, this person who stood tall, and then that gives your guys resistance to being knocked down and shit like that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And all the while, you're a capable fighter.
Mm-hmm.
During this, you know, nobody is as fragile as, like, you don't have that first level mage getting one shot,
right?
Thing like combat is very deadly, but nobody is literally paper thin,
right? And let's talk about that too, because another interesting kind of mechanical change they have here is that instead of taking direct damage to your HP the entire time, you have a stamina that gets knocked down during a fight, and if your stamina reaches zero, then you're knocked out for the rest of the fight. The rest of your party goes on, and when the fight is over, you'll come back up again.
You have less HP.
Right. All the while you're getting hit, you're taking minor hits to your HP, but you can get knocked out of a fight and still be viable for the next one, because you still have plenty of HP to go into the next one. You don't die until your HP goes down to zero, which HP comes down much, much slower than your stamina does.
Yes.
So, yeah. And then to all of your healing items restore stamina and not HP for the most part. And so the way you restore HP is by resting.
And they, I wrote a, on the backer blog on the Patreon page, I wrote a whole blog entry about this mechanic, the mm-hmm. way that they do campfires.
Right.
Because it's so much better.
It's so much better.
than the D&D alternative, where, like, the way that you play in Baldur's Gate, if you want to rest, which you have to because it's D&D and your spell casting dependent on it, is if you're in a dungeon, you quick save before you do it. And then if you get attacked in the middle of the night, you reload.
Yeah.
Because if you get attacked in the middle of the night, you're already at your weakest. It's not tense and fun. It's just like, well, I'm just going to get fucked over. I can't cast my spells and my guys are already hurt. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to lose this encounter.
Right.
Most likely. And it can just happen and happen again. This turns it into like a resource management kind of thing.
Because you can only have 4 campfire items at a time. So that means that between, you know, town runs, you can only really rest 4 times. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of balance them carefully. You have to wait until, you know, you don't want to use all your campfires too early on just because your guys lost a little bit of HP. You still need to kind of play it stringently, get it to a point where, you know, you're getting close to death's door, but not really. Then you can use your campfire, be fully restored again. Now you're down to 3, but you can continue on your quest.
Yeah, it's the same kind of risk reward. Like, can I fit in one more room on this life that you do in Darkest Dungeon when they introduce campfires? And I love that. Like, it just makes it matter more, you know, which is it just feels better rather than like a thing that I'm save scumming. Like, I don't hate save scumming the way a lot of people do, but I don't like the way resting is handled in video game versions of D&D, and I like this a lot.
You can also rest at inns and stuff. It's the same mechanic. But when you rest at an inn, you can decide to pay extra to get bonuses to certain stats for the whole party for the remainder of this current, you know, between rests.
Yeah, session. For the day.
Yeah.
And that's really cool, too, because they make actual resting free, which is cool. Like, you should be able to do that, you know. But then they make if you want to pay more, you can get these kind of statistical bonuses. It kind of plays that we can probably talk a little bit about the mechanics, because that plays into the way that battles are kind of fought, because those tiny statistical upgrades you get end up being really important. Like, the kind of combat this is, like, I the thing I keep comparing it to is Divinity, which is the other big CRPG I played this year.
Right.
And Divinity, the combat is about giving you a rule set in the world and giving you, like, immense amounts of freedom.
Yeah.
To kind of try to break it. And I really love that. Like, I really love the combat in Divinity and how it's about, like, setting up situations and ambushes and, like, figuring out ways to exploit things.
Yeah, lots of environment usage.
Yeah, and I love that. This, because the environments are beautiful, like paintings, and because it's taking a different approach, you can't do combat moves outside of combat. Enemies will often get the jump on you. Like, it's very difficult to actually ambush anything,
right?
Because they don't move, so you can't stay in a defensible position. And if it's a set encounter, you have to go initiate it through dialogue,
right?
And you can't, as far as I can tell, and if there's a really obvious way to do this, then somebody let me know, because I'm embarrassed I missed it, but can't just initiate combat because I know some guy's a shithead. I don't even want to hear what he has to say. And you can't buff, you can't cast spells outside of combat, like things like that. So it's more restrictive. So the combat ends up becoming more about, like, stacking bonuses.
Yeah.
It becomes like a little bit like the weird way I feel like, again, comparing it to tabletop, because this game, like, wants to be compared to tabletop stuff. It reminds me of Shadowrun, where, like, Shadowrun, you know, is about, like, if you look at it, it's about, like, incremental bonuses. Like, I have, you know, X, Y, and Z cyberware that give me +1 to aim. I'm changing the lighting condition. The enemy is throwing chaff into the air and doing this and trying to add negatives.
Right.
And there's a lot of buffs and debuffs in the actual combat, and all of the stuff you can do before combat, all the potions, are buffs and debuffs.
Yeah, there definitely is. There's a way to force attack, so you can kind of, if you know someone's a shithead, you know it's going to be just a combat initiative no matter what you say in this dialogue, you can instead just force attack them and kind of push it there. But it's still, like, everything happens right then. So you, for some fights, like I did the Radrix Keep fight, and at the end of that, when you're fighting the Raedric guy, mm-hmm. then you can actually set up traps up at his little throne room and force initiate after that if you want. Like, you have a little bit of time to set stuff up, but it's definitely not the primary focus of how combat's meant to go.
Yeah, it ends up being, it feels like, at least so far, that a lot of it ends up being more of like a knockdown dragout kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can use space a little bit less than I can in other games, which is kind of a bummer. Like, it ends up being more tactical about managing my skills and kind of the micro positions rather than like the macro positions on the battlefield.
Yeah.
And it's when I was talking about the glitch that they patched out, I did the Raedric fight before I was supposed to,
mm-hmm.
Like more or less as soon as it became available, because I didn't know about the stronghold thing, which you're clearly supposed to do first.
Yeah.
Like, on your way down to the stronghold, you meet a bunch of NPCs and the like. And so I was under leveled for it. And before the patch, if you were a ranger and had a companion, your animal could act as you, including talking. So you could, I set all of my guys up in his like vestibule and then just sent my bear to go talk to him. And then the bear got killed. And then I could lure, once combat had already been initiated, I could pull individual guys.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which, like, again, that's, I mean, I can see why they didn't do that, because it's so unrealistic. Like,
right.
Oh, like, all the guards keep getting lured into, you know, they don't say anything, keep getting lured into the side passage. And this talking bear just got our fucking hackles up. But, like, again, it's satisfying to kind of work the system like that.
Right.
Which is, again, a thing that Divinity is all about.
Right.
It's something you can do in Baldur's Gate and Fallout a lot, but they've really scaled back in this. Like, they don't, I get the sense that they don't really like people. They don't want people to do shit like that, which is fine. It's more realistic,
mm-hmm.
and goes with the tone they're going for more, but it is also really fun to come up with those exploits.
Yeah, I think. Agree. That is something that isn't, you know, more enjoyable when you're able to, even within the boundaries of the game's development, like, break the game. Like,
yeah.
They want you to break it, but you know, this takes a little more of a static approach. It still ends up being enjoyable, though.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I really love it. And even though I didn't beat it, I'm still intending to. Like, I'm going to, you know,
I'm going to be playing this for a while.
Yeah, I'm going to play it for a while. Like, I'm going to put in my 70 hours or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, like, that aspect of it kind of comes along. I'm just, like, the reason why I'm clearing out negative things to say about it, because I don't have that many negative things to say about it. So I want to get them on the table and then can move on to just, like, the shit that I like.
Sure.
But the because it's also that don't break our game philosophy also kind of comes into the general tone in writing, because this game is very serious.
Yeah.
Like, in a way that the games it's inspired by are not.
That's true.
Like, I guess at least like Baldur's Gate, but like Planescape has a lot. Like, Planescape is one of the bleakest games of all time, but there are funny lines in it and funny situations. And then, even in Baldur's Gate, like I did the replay there, there are more jokes in it than I remembered. This feels very humorless to me so far. Which is fine, because
right.
It's a serious story and it's got very, very dense, very serious lore, about everything, which is cool, but it just kind of has this, like, the whole presentation's very serious. Like, don't break this. This is a serious high fantasy kind of,
yeah,
you know. Like, they're almost going for, like, not, it's not similar to this, but Games of Thronesian in, like, tone of, like, deadliness and stakes.
That's true. I think that has a lot to do with, too, this actually being, you know, Josh Sawyer's story and setting and everything. And so it's, like, instead of, it's an adaptation of someone else's, where you can kind of see the humor from a, you know, a higher
an outside
point
perspective.
Of view.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just Josh is deep in it the whole time, and he has to be so absorbed into the setting and story in order for it to be complete and feel good that he can't see that higher level portion where he can add in, you know, the humor of the situation. Like, there's no space hamsters is the main
thing,
you know.
There's one little Easter egg that kind of recalls it, but it's not like the space hamster. There's fucking dialogue about the space hamster. Like,
yeah.
In the it was a point of conversation, and this doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Which is, again, it's fine. Like, I like a serious tone. I think you're right. I think what it is that it is his baby.
Yeah.
Which is why those, you know, and that's cool. Like, I dig that. And like, what's actually there, I really, really love. It's just, it's worth pointing out the, like, articulating the ways this is different than the games that are, it's inspired by. But
sure.
Yeah, in general, like the other than those negative things, like the fact that I feel like it kind of makes you color within the lines a little bit too much,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that it is so humorless, like I pretty much love everything else about it.
Yeah, I agree.
It is beautiful.
It is definitely a very pretty game.
Like, it is so, like, it's, man, is it so good looking. Like, it makes me wish that, I yearn for these pre-rendered backgrounds of things. Because they just look so good. And, like, they looked good in old games, too. But this is just at a higher resolution.
Yeah, exactly.
Than any of those things. And it just, you just get this sense of detail and everything. It just, like, looks really good.
It does look super good. Yeah, so if you aren't familiar with how this game was pitched, essentially, they said that they were going to do these pre-rendered, like, hand-painted, most of them, it seems like, like, backgrounds and stuff, and then your actual characters are 3D models, like, set on set paths through these environments, but none of the vast majority of, like, buildings and environmental stuff on the map is just solid background that you're wandering through. So it gives them a lot of time to be real art, you know, real painterly and artistic with it, and they look so good.
Yeah, it is. Even your 3D models are they fit in perfectly.
Yeah,
with these backgrounds, like, they're high enough detailed, or high, you know, have enough detail in order to look like they're part of it, like a piece of these kind of beautiful fantasy paintings, which I think is super. You know, it just looks very cohesive.
Yeah,
they do. There are some really, like, awesome budgetary constraint things that they did that are pros, I think. Like, so there are no cutscenes in the game.
Right.
Which I'm fine with.
Right.
Or at least so far, like, there's not really cutscenes. Instead, when they get to a point where there would be a cutscene, you do these, like, drawn choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Like, mini, that would be a game, like, they're like game books. Like, they use resources that you have, and you make choices that actually, like, seem like they have immediate consequence, even as things as far as, like, climbing up a wall or something like that.
Right.
And, like, you can see what they did. Like, they didn't want to animate all of these different models climbing up a wall.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? So, like, how can we get around this in a way that actually uses the medium strength? The wordiness goes into that as well, because, like, if this game was made by BioWare, it would be a fucking nightmare. Like, listening to all of the text in this game read aloud, like, I would be half as far in the game as I am now.
Yeah, I agree. Typically, a lot of the important dialogue by some of the important characters has voice acting, but typically only, like, the most important passages. All the rest of the dialogue is just text. And I actually ended up lowering a lot of the voice level just because I was like, well, I'm going to be reading most of this anyway, and I don't want to get the voice acting in the way of me reading faster than it.
Yeah.
So I just, like, turned down the voice acting because, I mean, voice acting is nice, but it doesn't really add anything to the game.
They really handle it perfectly, where, like, what it adds is the opportunity for an actor to get across some characterization.
Right, yeah.
But, like, I'm always less interested in the, like, the performance. Like, I don't really, you know, there are certain line reads that, like, yes, I want to hear the actor do it, and the voice acting is good, but getting a little bit to kind of hear what the character is supposed to sound like and then letting me read
exactly
faster.
Yeah.
Like that. And that's, you know, that is one of the things that separates old from new RPGs and separates old BioWare from new BioWare. That is, like, one of the things I most miss. Like, I love that. Just, like, because I just, especially with so much text in this game and so much of it that is weird, foreign, like, Welsh sounding words.
Right.
Because the language this game is based in doesn't sound like typical fantasy.
No.
So it just, like, being able to kind of, like, recognize a word without reading it. Like, there are lots of words from this game I recognize as names of places, but I couldn't pronounce them. I just kind of do this shorthand of, like, okay, I know what that thing is.
Yeah.
That collection of symbols. I don't have to know how to say it. It's not exactly my language. But I can just, it allows me just to move through quicker. And if you're going to have a game with this much text and story, like, that's really necessary.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a lot when I was writing down some of my notes of, like, where I'm at in the game. And I was like, I never bothered to pronounce any of this. Like, I know the word, I've seen it plenty, but I don't know how the fuck you're supposed to pronounce Nasatak.
Yorter. There's lots of, like, E's and O's together. It has that kind of, like, that's just smart. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it is a smart way to do it. And it's, like, it's one of those things where, like, it feels like a product aimed at me. And that feels good.
Yeah,
like, hey, you don't like it when when fucking your Dragon Age character won't shut the goddamn up. And so at least at this point, or at least in this game, and also, I mean, your character isn't voiced, like you're a blank slate.
Mm-hmm.
Like those old games, which I really like because it allows the companions to kind of shine, which is Obsidian's thing. And so far, all the companions are really good.
Yeah, companions are super good. I need to find more, actually. I need some for my stronghold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can hire guys, right?
I know. Yeah, I know I can hire guys, but I haven't done. Well, actually, let's talk about that system real quick because that's actually super cool.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of companions. I think there's like 8 companions you can find throughout the game. All of which are of different classes. There's a few classes that aren't covered by, scripted AI companions, scripted voice acted and dialogue full companions. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is at any inn, you can hire anyone, I believe, one minus your level mm-hmm. or below. And each level that you want to hire someone at is increased in price. And mm-hmm. then you just build out the character.
Yes.
So you create your own companion from scratch when you need someone to fit a specific role. You need it. You're like, oh shit, I don't have whatever class would be really useful for this next thing coming up. Then you just go roll one up real quick. You pay mm-hmm. some money to hire him, and you've got your own companion that you made yourself.
Yeah, it's super good. Like since I didn't go down to the stronghold and get the pre-made NPCs right away. I just had my one, and I was trying to fight Lord Raedric
mm-hmm.
with just me and the wizard guy you meet really early on. So I had to roll up a bunch of these guys. And now that I want to use the story related ones, but now I have perfect guys to hang out at my stronghold.
Yeah,
awesome. And protect it. It's just really elegant. And like again, just looking at ways that evolves from Infinity Engine systems, like that's like a thing that you had to do. You could do that in Baldur's Gate through an exploit, like setting up a multiplayer server and playing it by yourself,
right?
And that's how you had to do it. And they just took that thing that's a cool feature they know people want and built it into the game.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Yeah, it like that's just again, elegance the word. And then like a thousand little things, like there's no inventory constraint.
Yeah.
You know, like you can immediately send things back to your stronghold. There's no explanation for it.
No.
But like if I just have to pick up like 1,000 leather armors after killing a bunch of dudes, like
they can all go back to my...
Yeah.
So your characters themselves have a limited number of inventory slots, and they can only use stuff in combat that's in their hotbar, which mm-hmm. Lends to upgrades that give them more hotbar slots.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a box that's just infinitely big that you can fit all the junk you want to sell into. You're not going to be encumbered. You're not going to have to deal with any of that bullshit.
Yep.
It's just there. It's just a feature. There's no explanation for it. Just ease of use, perfect. Everything you've ever wanted in a CRPG.
And like again, like it's not like there. You can have a game where encumbrance and inventory space is meaningful, and like is a cool mechanic. Like I like it in Deus Ex.
Right.
I like it in Resident Evil 4. Like I like those systems. But they realize that like, hey, this was always a bullshit thing in Baldur's Gate. The first patches that came out, like mods and stuff for Baldur's Gate, were like unlimited stacking.
Yep.
Like people were like, why can only carry arrows and stacks with 20? So like people patched it or made mods for it.
Right.
So they're like, in this type of game where you're going to fight large numbers of guys because it is a game about group like melee brawls.
Mm.
Each of those people is going to be carrying a weapon and armor. We know the player is going to want to resell them. We can't have stringent weight limits or equipment limits because of the type of game it is. If this was if it was more about one-on-one or many on one encounters, like you can do that, which is what Deus Ex or RE4 is about. It's like you're just one dude on you do fight a lot of different guys in that, but they don't have as much equipment either.
Exactly.
Like, if you're fighting a UNATCO soldier, like they have a gun, whereas you fight a brigand in Pillars of Eternity and they have a helmet, armor, and a sword and a shield.
Yeah, if not some consumables on top of that.
Yes. Yeah. So the they know for this type of game, like it's just very well considered. And that's really impressive to me. Like from a game design standpoint, the choices they made are very impressive.
Yeah.
So I know that, and story wise, we haven't really talked about the story, because I don't feel like I'm in it very much. Like I'm like 12 or 13 hours into the game and like, it hasn't shown very many of its cards to me.
Yeah. We can talk about some of the general stuff. I think it's probably worth going into spoilers about some of the cooler things that I've come across that I'd like to talk about, but don't want to spoil the people who haven't already started playing the game.
Yeah, but, we can move on to that. Yeah, we can do that. I don't know a lot of stuff, and I really wanted to have this beat by the time we recorded so I could really go into it, because everything I read says that the story pulls a really cool, like, 180. Like, it subverts a lot of the stuff earlier on.
I'm only in Act 2, but, like, Defiant's Bay is so huge that I'm going to be here for forever. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about the starting bit of the story real quick, and then we can move into spoilers and talk about kind of where we're both at and any cool stuff we've come across.
Yeah.
So the game starts, you create your person. They're migrating to the land here.
Again, it's very, all these names slip off my brain.
Yeah, because it slipped off my name too. It's the Deerwood is the name of the area. So
yeah,
you're migrating into the free Palatinate of Deerwood, which is the overarching name for the area that the game takes place in. You're with some group, and this supernatural event that is rumored by the natives is kind of in their mythology. Called the Belitwak, I believe, something of that sort.
Yeah, Biowak.
Yeah, Biowak, which is like this windstorm that destroys everything, essentially. People don't typically survive it when one comes across, according to the mythology surrounding it.
Yeah, it's supernatural too. It's not just wind. It's like soul wind, magic wind.
And you manage to narrowly escape it by hiding into this cave, which was also like an ancient like temple of the natives of the land, and you and a couple of the people who you're migrating with make your way out to the other side of this cave after losing the rest of your nomad party, and you come across some people performing some ritual in front of these stones. And your guys, the two people you're traveling with, or one, depending on what happens right at the beginning, they completely just, whatever this ritual goes on, their like souls are completely sucked from them, and they're dead. But you survive for some reason. And suddenly you start seeing things. You are able to see spirits and communicate with them. You come to find out later that this is a known thing in this world, referred to as a watcher. Is someone who has a connection to the spiritual world and can see and communicate with spirits. On top of that, there's also reincarnation in this world, in that most people are reincarnated spirits, and you can become awakened to the past lives of yourself and kind of know the history of what your spirit was before it entered your current body. And so Watchers kind of had these connections to that realm. And now the whole plot is what the hell is a Watcher, and what the fuck am I supposed to do with myself now?
Yeah, that's definitely the premise, like the opening thing. And they wait, that's how they integrate the Kickstarter rewards, is that people who backed a certain amount get to write these little backstories for NPCs you can't interact with. You can just read their past lives.
Mm-hmm.
I love how they color code those to avoid them if you're not in the mood.
Yeah, it's definitely just a lot of fluff text. So if you're interested in hearing a bunch of stories of random Denzians of this world in various times and various events, you can just go around, find these backer names with the gold placards, and talk to them. Not really talk to them, but look at their spirit and get this little story. Some of them are pretty cool, but it's a lot of fucking text, as this game tends to be. So
yeah, you have to like to read.
Yeah,
And that's probably good for the setup.
Yeah,
of the plot. It's very good. It's on sale like at the moment because Steam Summer Sale.
Mm-hmm.
If you like old computer role playing games, like I don't think you could do better. Like this, you know, you probably already know this and should play it. Again, like time will tell. Like I'm gonna be curious after I beat this and then Numenera comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to like crown you know, like a Divinity, Wasteland 2, Pillars of Eternity, or Numenera. But in any case, like, you know, whoever wins, we win.
Because yeah, it's exactly. All,
you know, it's really, really cool shit, and it's a good time to like this kind of game. Yeah, and we're going to do our admin stuff, and then we'll be back with a spoiler section of the plot as we know it so far, with the caveat that not super far into it.
Yeah, neither of us have been. So, yeah, admin stuff real quick. You can always come hang out with us on Twitter at Comrade Podcast or on Facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade.
Yeah. And you can, if you want to support the show and the network financially, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And if you are interested in my ongoing relationship with, you know, my favorite game of last year, I started a Tumblr, which is isaacstuffreviewed.tumblr.com, where I'm slowly going through every item, enemy, and aspect of the game.
Yeah.
And writing about it. So for a little while, I was updating every day, and then that fell apart because I was doing longer articles. But there's a good dozen or so little reviews of items and bosses and shit.
They're good little posts. Of the deeper mechanical aspects if you enjoy Isaac but kind of have been playing pretty shallow so far.
Yeah, or also just like, hey, this is what I've learned about this thing because I, you know, keep playing this fucking game way more than I should stop. I think that's probably it. Ratings, reviews, and iTunes are always helpful.
Yeah, ratings, reviews, and iTunes. And if you have a game you think we'd like and want to see it checked out on the show, you can hit us up on any of those venues or the duckfeed.tv/contact page, and we will see it, and we'll put it up for consideration.
Indeed.
All right, guys. So a little bit of a ditty here, and we're going to get into some spoilery stuff. So stop here if you are haven't played this game or don't want to know.
All right.
All right.
I think you might be further along than I am even.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm in the big city, which I think is the same one.
Yeah, Defiance Bay.
But I just got there. Like, I just started doing stuff there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's huge. There's like a ton of side quests you can find and do stuff about. Let's see. So, yeah, that's only act two, and I'm pretty sure it has like four acts.
Mm-hmm. and this one is as big. This is like when you get to Baldur's Gate in Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, there's a whole half of the game where I explore this huge city. But it does that way earlier in this game.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm level six. I have a full party of
voiced NPCs.
Yeah, voiced NPCs. I have you were talking about Aloth, who's the wizard.
Mm-hmm.
I have Edder, who I think you get pretty early on too, the fighter guy, the beardy fighter. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, have you come across I think you're required to. You came across Durance, right? The priest.
The fire priest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got some cool story stuff coming up for you that you probably haven't hit yet. He's neat. And then Kana is the chanter that I have.
Yep.
And Sigani is the ranger with her wolf that I think you meet her right outside of Defiance Bay. I don't know if you met her or not.
Yeah, no, I met her. I just didn't. She's not traveling with me because I'm playing as a ranger.
Oh, gotcha.
So I have all the same characters, but I have one fighter.
Like a bot?
Yeah, a bot.
Okay, cool. So let's see. I had a couple like of the cool things I've come across so far that has been brought up. Mm-hmm. So have you fought these witches, these WICHTS, these little like demonized kids that come fight after you? I forget where you run into them, but I think I've run into a couple before I got to Defiance Bay.
I think I have, yeah, but I didn't learn about them.
Yeah.
Very much further than that.
So their story comes up a little bit about them more. I think a lot of it came up in early Defiance Bay and also partially in the Raedric stuff.
Yeah, because kids are being born without souls.
Yeah. So what the Wicks are is the Animancers were trying to fix the Blight, the Widewind's Legacy thing. And in order to try and fix that, they attached random animal souls onto children.
That's pretty rad.
And
I like where this is going.
Yeah. And so, like, it's great because then they're actually, like, responding to, like, touch and emotion of their parents and like caretakers, like they're responding to all that. But then they reach puberty and like the body and soul start fighting each other, and they know there's a mismatch there. And then they start going fucking rogue and like attacking everyone like a wild animal.
I dig that.
That's so rad, dude.
Yeah, that's a super good idea. We didn't talk about, we could have talked about this in the main episode too, but like it's interesting because when you learn about, that's how you get experience in this game. You don't get it by killing shit. You get it by learning things like that.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool.
A lot of experience just from like you know, finding out new information and completing your bestiary and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, shit. So there's some stuff. I probably am a little bit ahead of you and don't want to bring up too much stuff because you have your current quest probably is to find Meerwald.
Yes. Oh,
no, you're
not Mera.
You did Meerwald. Meerwald. Oh, so Meerwald shit's cool because he was the one that was at Cae Nua.
Yeah.
So that shit's rad. He was the only other watcher anyone knew about that's like a living watcher. So you go find him because you want to know what the hell a watcher, you know, what am I supposed to be doing with this power? And he's just like locked himself in a dungeon and is fighting with all of his past selves.
Yeah, that's when you get the stronghold.
Yeah,
he's the stronghold boss.
Yeah, he's the Cae Nua guy.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about the endless dungeon
in the
stronghold either,
man.
Which is possibly a mistake.
Well, I don't know, man. There's too much to talk about. I think we talked about some good stuff, but there is an endless dungeon inside the stronghold you get to manage.
Yeah, and it's not quite endless. There's like, I think there's a boss to it, but it's a very deep.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the side, you know, the side quest that
never
is
ends.
Alongside all of your main quest.
Yeah.
The as far as story stuff, like I ended up putting the game down for a while because I was working on school mostly. Uh-huh. And then picked it back up just to refresh my memory for the show, even though I intended on beating it. So I had to like read the journal to refresh my memory why I was in Defiance Bay.
Right.
But I just did side quests. I went down to the catacombs and I helped that guy who was taken over by the wizard.
Right.
That's
cool.
Yeah, like what, that was a cool, you know, I like that. I like fantasy drug dens.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten back on the main path just yet.
Okay, so. Yeah. So you're just a little bit like you're two story quests behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're once you complete these next two story quests, it opens up into like three separate, you're kind of given like three tasks, and I haven't done any of those yet. Because there's just so many side quests to be doing in Defiance Bay that I can't stop myself. I don't want to lose any of them.
Yeah, because it's all uniformly pretty well written. Like I'm playing this game alongside, I started playing. I don't know how much I'm gonna pick it back up, but we played like the first 15 hours or so of Dragon Age Inquisition.
Uh huh.
And it's amazing how poorly that compares to this.
Oh, nice.
Because it's so like it is. The combat is fun. Like the characters are pretty good. But boy is the actual writing and the things you do not very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been too big of a BioWare writing fan anyway.
Yeah, like it's just disappointing. It's not Bethesda bad, but like it's approaching that. And it just, or it's more like Obsidian is just really good and it just spoils you for writing. Because even down to like, even that just, oh, this wizard took over this guy's thing. Like even that quest is more nuanced than it initially seems. Like the guy, you know, was taken over because he was a dealer and fucked up. So he was hiding a secret,
right?
Which is what she thinks. The secret is just way worse and weirder than she thinks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, which is like, again, that just, and this, that whole thing, the entire encounter takes a half hour to get the quest, research it and finish it and stuff. Even if that, you know, but it's still better written than most of, you know, the quest in Dragon Age Inquisition. You know, and that's just a weird one little side quest,
right?
You know, so like that shit is really, really impressive. And I guess like this, the cool stuff that we just kind of scratched the surface of the main quest, I guess that shit gets blown open, near the end.
I'm excited.
There's like a capital T kind of video game twist, like up there with like the, you know, BioShock and what's the game, that I like a lot, Spec Ops, the line.
Spec kind Ops,
of like, yeah, like there's like a big video game twist.
Nice.
So I guess it's supposed to be really good. Like it's very earned and very uncomfortable and philosophical. And like,
I mean, I'm comfortable enough in like in the game itself, just the static layout of, you know, a CRPG like this, that I can play it for, here until however long, just doing these little side quests and getting my guy's buffer and doing cool shit.
Yeah.
So yeah. Having that, you know, having something cool happen in the storyline is icing on the cake for me. So
Yeah. And that's the thing too. Like I compared some of the things in this game slightly unfavorably to Divinity in the main episode, but the main quest of Divinity is no great shakes. You know, this, the writing and storytelling in this is a lot better.
Yeah.
Divinity, you know, so
cool stuff with combat system.
Yeah. Yep.
So, cool. Yeah, but fuck, I think there was something else I was going to say, but I don't remember what it was.
I mean, there's a lot, we're not going to get all of it. There's a lot more to say. What we should do is after we both beaten it, do like a 5-minute appendix.
Yeah, let's do it.
5-10 minute appendix on whatever we're talking about that week.
Sure.
So like the Hotline Miami 3 Super Meat Boy 2 episode. we'll do a 10-minute pillar appendix.
Totally.
Looking forward to a more great, you know, computer RPGs.
One thing I do want to say, you know, not really related to this game, but what the fuck is Avalon going to do?
I don't know. I'm curious.
I'm really curious.
Yeah, start your own game studio, buddy. I hope that he continues along this path because he did a lot of writing on the Bethesda South Park RPG,
mm-hmm.
and he loves it. Which everyone says, like, this is better than it has any right to be, but like,
yeah.
No one's told me, like, hey, if you really dislike South Park, you'll like this anyway.
Right.
So I hope that he doesn't just become kind of like a gun for hire and do more shit like that. I would actually, like, selfishly, like, if he got hired by Bethesda, it'd be kind of the best of both worlds. Like, I don't like Bethesda, but he would shore up their weakness.
Yeah, I was hoping so that much. Too, but the fact that Fallout 4 is already coming out this year
means
it's already a wash.
It's too late for that, yeah.
So, like, that would have been my dream situation there. It would have been like, he's like, you know what? All right, Eternity is pretty much done. I'm still working on Numenera. Like, that's all happening. But also, I'm the lead writer of Fallout 4 now. And I would have fucking, like, pissed my pants. Like,
yeah, that would have been the best thing. Pretty amazing, because as is, like, I'm cautiously optimistic about Fallout 4. It doesn't look good, but as far as the writing and story goes, but like, they would have to be really, really willfully ignorant to not look at the response to New Vegas,
right,
and take something from it.
I mean, literally everyone
said like, this is broken, but the writing is 1,000 times better than 3.
Yeah, exactly. And like, Fallout 3 was still a good game.
It just, yeah,
like, New Vegas blew it out of the water in every which way, compare, like, writing wise.
Yeah.
The story of Fallout 3 was nothing compared to what New Vegas was.
And there are no characters in Fallout 3.
Yeah.
Or like, no characters that are good or mean as shit. Like, Moira's okay. Your dad is like, he's heroic but good. You know, he's just a generic good guy,
but he's kind of a
character. And then Eden is good. Like, the AI president thing was cool.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, this Augustus guy, your character, all the companions, people you run into, they all suck.
Yeah.
Like, none of them are interesting at all. It's got that Bethesda problem. So I just really hope that they, you know, listen to some of their criticism.
I'm still real excited for another Fallout game.
So. Yeah, I'm going to play, like, I'm talking about it like I'm not going to put, like, 400 hours into it, because I'm definitely going to.
Right.
I pre-ordered it already.
Pip-Boy that fits on your wrist.
That
you got the Pip-Boy edition?
I did.
That's funny. I'm not sure if I'm going to get it, because it seems silly. I want the phone app while I'm playing the game.
But yeah.
I'll just have it on my phone. I don't need it on my goddamn wrist.
I don't know if I'm... I don't necessarily think I'm going to wear it. I just want to be able to take pictures of it. And I already have the Pip-Boy clock.
Yeah.
From Fallout 3, so I can put it up next to that. I just have to collect some Pip-Boys.
I'm definitely going to pre-order it. I just haven't done it yet. So.
Yeah.
All
right, I'm disappointed because I don't know my computer will run it, so I ended up pre-ordering it for PS4. If it turns out, like, if they release the PC specs and I can play it just fine, I can cancel it and reorder it.
Okay, yeah. Another PC Fallout game is probably worth, like, I don't know, a graphics card upgrade at some point if need be.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's just a little jump on a, like, used graphics card off Craigslist or something, like, it might be worth it.
Yeah, yeah, and also, like, it's not like I couldn't get it again if I decided to as well. Like, if they release a game of the year, like, I could wait for the DLCs and do a PC version.
There you go. That's the way to do it, probably. Anyway. Yeah.
But anywho,
all right.
Thanks everybody for listening, and good night.
Night.